This is the Kol Hadash Podcast. Originally recorded on October 2nd, 2024, Rabbi Adam Shalom's theme for the Rosh Hashanah evening is Jewish Divisions, Us or Them, a perspective on the lack of unity within Judaism. This is the sermon from that event.
Where is the Messiah? It seems like everything is falling apart. No social order, no values, no kindness, environmental collapse, war, anti-Semitism, communal conflict, poverty, the list goes on and on. It just seems too much for us to fix. A Messiah promises to solve all of our problems. Miraculous intervention, cosmic authority, universal peace and fellowship. Belief in the Messiah was born from disaster, the first destruction of Jerusalem and the end of the line of King David. Since that disaster, believers have claimed that Mashiach, the Anointed, was about to come, or he was here, or he was just here and he's coming right back. From Jesus in late antiquity to Shabtai Tzvi in early modernity, Jews have argued whether this Messiah is the real Messiah. Part of the argument has been whether the world is truly bad enough. They believed it would be darkest before the dawn, and the birth pangs of the Messiah would be the undoing of the world. Even today, some believers do not really care whether things get worse. The worse it gets, the happier they are. They may even try to move things along. I do not want a Messiah. I do not want to want a Messiah. Desperate times plus hoping for miracles equals bad decisions. You'll believe anyone and you'll do anything. We recognize that human feeling of doom and disaster, and we must find another response. We declare that we are not doomed because we know that we can make a difference in this world right now, today. No messiahs need apply. That Jewish tradition is even more dangerous than reality. Tonight is the beginning of the Jewish New Year. Tonight we connect to our extended Jewish family. Everyone here tonight, whatever your identity, is connected to the global Jewish people at this moment. We see candles, we hear the shofar, we grapple with Torah and tradition, just as Jacob grappled with his brother Esau in their mother's womb. Jacob is later renamed Israel, he who wrestles with God in the night. The next morning, when Israel finally sees his estranged brother Esau, Israel says that seeing his brother's face is like seeing the face of God. In other words, the Jewish people truly wrestle with each other. Even those welcoming Rosh Hashanah tonight with a family meal instead of services face the challenge of extended time with extended family. Verbal wrestling guaranteed. There is nothing new about Jewish disagreement. There is one universal ancient Jewish tradition. Some Jews telling other Jews, "You're doing Judaism wrong." During the Exodus, Miriam and Aaron tell Moses, "You're doing it wrong." When Hebrew kings worshiped other gods or oppressed the poor, Hebrew prophets told them, "You're doing it wrong." In the Roman era, Jerusalem temple priests competed with early rabbis. The early Christian church and the Jewish establishment debated whether the Messiah had already arrived and left, or had he never arrived at all. In medieval times, Jewish rationalists like Maimonides battled Jewish mystics. In Eastern Europe, pietist Hasidim and religious legalist Misnagdim and Enlightenment Maskilim argued with each other, even excommunicated each other. In the early 20th century, Reform Jews wanted integration to the dominant culture. Zionists emphasized separation and creating a unique Jewish national culture in Hebrew. Diasporists promoted distinct Jewish culture in Yiddish while living among the nations. Each of these groups in their own day said the same thing to the other groups: "You're doing Judaism wrong." Judaism has always been diverse, multivocal, multicultural, multi-practice, multi-theological. If we argue today, same as it ever was. Two Jews, many arguments with or without a Messiah. There are bitter Jewish divisions today, no doubt. Not talking about our disagreements will not make them disappear. We speak the truth. You can handle the truth. We live by our values and we believe what we say, so you're going to get the emes, the truth as I see it, on three key Jewish battles. First, those who celebrate the new Jewish diversity and those who hate it. Second, the ultra-Orthodox versus everyone else. And third, Zionists, anti-Zionists, and those caught in between. Touching any of these third rails gets rabbis fired. At Kol Chadash, I would fail my rabbinic duties if I did not address them. Agree with me, disagree with me, or be unsure, or change your mind half a dozen times. It may well be that there is no one answer to some of these problems. But there is a Jewish tradition for no answers also. When early rabbis debated Jewish law, sometimes a problem stumped them. Rosh Hashanah is the first night of a Jewish month, therefore it is a new moon. Every Jewish month begins with a new moon. Before we could mathematically predict the new moon, months were decreed by a rabbinic court in Jerusalem. They saw the new moon, and then they let everyone know the month had officially begun. But what if it were cloudy in Jerusalem? Solution: use witnesses from elsewhere. New problem: what if your deciding witness is 12 years and 11 months old? Well, boys under age 13 are not bar mitzvah, not subject to commandments, and so they are not valid witnesses. If the boy is right and he did see the new moon, then the month is set and he is age 13 and a valid witness. If he's wrong, there was not a new moon and he is not a valid witness. In these circumstances, the Talmud's rabbi declared, "Teku, we cannot resolve it." Now, they could have relied on 13-year-old girls, but they didn't accept women as witnesses back then. Teku, we cannot resolve it, is understood as the Tishbi will resolve the problems. When Elijah, the prophet, returns to announce the Messiah, Elijah will also make a stop in a yeshiva and solve all of these Teku situations. Of course, there is no guarantee today that all Jews will agree on his answers, or for that matter, be happy about a Messiah at all. In this life, in this world, we may agree, or we may disagree, or teku, agree to argue and still live together. Debate number one, the new Jewish diversity. The whole idea of looking Jewish is over. Looking Jewish meant looking like a European Ashkenazi Jew. The idea of looking Jewish is part of a whole system, sometimes called Ashkenormative. Jewish food means bagels. Jewish music is klezmer. Jewish jokes are shtick. For centuries, there have been Sephardic Jews from the Balkans and Turkey, Mizrahi Jews from Syria and Iraq, Mughrabi Jews from North Africa, Persian Jews from Iran, mountain Jews from Central Asia. It was never all Yiddish in Europe. Today, our diverse Jewish family includes thousands who have joined the Jewish people from every ethnicity, and thousands of children adopted into Jewish families. There are millions of people who are Jewish and one Jewish parent and another parent with their own cultures and identities. By now, there are plenty of Jewish and parents with their own Jewish and children. The Jewish and can celebrate one or both or all of their backgrounds. There are millions of loving partners who love a Jewish person and may be raising Jewish children or Jewish and children. We call those partners Jewish adjacent or Jewish-ish. You could call them Jew lovers. Technically accurate, but not the best term. The point is, looking Jewish, no more. Now, there are those who reject the new Jewish diversity. They long for the good old days when everyone Jewish looked the same, ate the same food, knew the same jokes. They tell these new Jews, you're not really Jewish. You're not really doing Judaism. Go away. To break that old tradition of you're doing it wrong, we must understand that declaring that Judaism says only what your kind of Jew believes is destructive because it denigrates and delegitimizes other Jews and their Judaism. It is also flat out wrong because with so many Jewish opinions, Jewish liturgies, Jewish rituals, Jewish cultures and customs, Jewish diversity is the Jewish tradition. We who celebrate Jewish diversity are the majority. No one Jewish Messiah, no one Judaism for all these varied Jews. Debate number two, ultra-Orthodoxy. There is fake news out there about Jewish history that too many Jews believe. They believe that before modern times, all Jews were Orthodox. They were all strictly observant. They all prayed three times a day. They never questioned the rabbis. This is just not true. First of all, they were people. And second, they were Jewish. Medieval rabbis complained a lot about lax Jewish practice, argumentative Jews, too much mixing with the outside world. The word Orthodox did not appear until the 19th century, when early Reform Jews started making changes. Those who did not want change claimed to have the correct doctrine, Orthodox. Yet even the Orthodox were split, as some of them were open to learning from modern knowledge and accepting some form of modern life, and others felt that any change was the camel's nose in the tent, a slippery slope, the first step on the road to ruin. The rejectionists, the Haredim, we say today, they raised all the walls, they drew up the drawbridge, they closed the doors and windows. In a phrase, their doctrine is Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, what is new is forbidden according to the Torah. Yes, you can drive a car and use a phone, but not a smartphone, because that could lead to the internet. Changing ideas, challenging tradition, unthinkable. Haredi communities still live in Yiddish. They refuse to teach modern science and history and math past arithmetic. They marry off their children in their teens so they will be fruitful and multiply and not have time to wonder whether there is anything more beyond the Eruv, that imaginary boundary that enables carrying on Shabbat but also binds you into a web of isolated community. This ultra-Orthodox Jewish world is alien to the majority of American Jews and Israeli Jews. The large majority of Jews do not keep kosher. We do not believe that observing traditional Jewish law is essential to being Jewish. We do not reject human learning and culture and society. We endorse them. And yet, ultra-Orthodox groups like Chabad receive millions of dollars from non-ultra-Orthodox Jews because too much of our 90% thinks that their 10% is preserving Judaism. They are preserving one kind of Judaism, but so are we. The Haredim refuse to serve in the Israeli Defense Forces. They claim that their study of Torah and Talmud does more for Israel's security than the army. Their real objection is to mixing with the outside world and seeing the grass might be greener beyond the Eruv. They believe that the real solution to Jewish problems is the Messiah. Some Chabadniks think the Messiah already came, as Rebbe Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who died in 1994. Others believe that if every Jew everywhere observes the commandments, like lighting Shabbat candles, redemption will be at hand. Thus their outreach by asking, are you Jewish? Even outside of Highland Park High School. You think I'm joking, they're there. Shaking the lulav or lighting candles is just the first step, they hope. They are not waiting patiently for a Messiah to deliver them. They want Moshiach now, Messiah now. Their solution to Jewish pluralism is that everyone should do what they say. Their Judaism is not our Judaism. Their solution is not ours. Our Judaism will survive and thrive if we support each other, if we have the self-confidence of authenticity, if we stand proudly at the meeting point of tradition and modernity, saying yes and. We who live in open Judaism, we are the majority. No Messiah is needed or wanted. Debate number 3, Zionism. We are not the first Jews to declare that we did not need a Messiah. The founders of Zionism were done waiting for a Messiah to save them. Most of them were secular, so they did not want a king Messiah or rebuilding the temple or restoring animal sacrifices and imposing religion. Theodor Herzl wrote, "Our rabbis will stay in their temples like our soldiers stay in their barracks." The ultra-Orthodox waiting for the Messiah were anti-Zionist, which makes them odd bedfellows with today's anti-Zionist universalists who may oppose the very idea of nation-states, especially ethnic nation-states. The ultra-Orthodox also make odd bedfellows with anti-Zionist liberal pacifists, pro-Palestinian protesters, progressives who see everything through racial and colonial lenses and thus see Israeli Jews as white Europeans, even though the majority of Israeli Jews have their roots in the Middle East and North Africa, in the non-Ashkenazi world. In the era of the protest sign, "Queers for Hamas," there is no limit for confusing connections. The key is, which Zionism are we talking about? Just like American patriotism, a Zionist could be someone who believes in the basic concept of a Jewish state, as a refuge, as a spark for Jewish cultural creativity, as the right of any self-aware ethnic group, just like Armenians or Serbs or even Palestinians. Or a Zionist could insist that every Jew must move to Israel, or at least every Jew should root for and work for Israel from the diaspora sidelines. A religious Zionist can believe that God promised the land of Israel to the Jewish people, both sides of the 1967 Green Line. A secular Zionist can believe that Jews have historical roots in the land, separate from what workable borders might be, and nothing to do with divine promises. Israel was Israel from 1949 to 1967, within the Green Line and without the West Bank, and the Israeli Declaration of Independence cites zero divine promises. In the balance of Jewish state and democracy, some Zionists emphasize the democracy, working for a Jewish state that is also a state for all of its citizens, with basic rights, recognition of minority cultures, and fundamental dignity. Other Zionists prioritize the Jewish over democracy, insisting that the Jews are the masters of the land, and treating the other as an enemy to oppress or even expel. There are Jewish terrorists who are Zionists. There are Jewish civil rights activists who are Zionists. The thousands of protesters rejecting Netanyahu through 2023 in peacetime and through 2024 in wartime, they are Zionists, waving the flag and singing the anthem. So too are Netanyahu's supporters. These days, Zionist can even be used as a slur and sometimes as a thin substitute for evil Jew or something worse. You may or may not consider yourself a Zionist. Maybe you're Zionist agnostic, or you do not choose a position one way or the other. Maybe you call yourself, or you know people who call themselves anti-Zionist. As for me, I do not fit into an easy box. I am anti-religious zealot Zionist. I support civil rights Zionists. I have no plans to move to Israel, though I have been there many times, and I will be again. And I have colleagues and friends doing important work there whom I support. I endorse a culturally Jewish state in some portion of that land, and I do not believe that ethnic states are impossibly anti-democratic. There are established national churches in Sweden and Norway and ethnic rites of return in many countries. It all depends on how you do your Zionism. Maybe I'm Zionish. And what about anti-Zionism? Anti-Zionist Jews have two official commitments. They are committed to Jewish identity, since they still identify as Jews. And they are also committed to human empathy and human rights for all peoples. I believe that one can value both Jewishness and universal empathy and still be some variety of Zionist. I understand if anti-Zionists see the two sides as incompatible. Teku, as long as we agree on one thing. If violence against Palestinians is wrong, so too is violence against Israelis. Death to Israel, by any means necessary, those are not simply conceptual exercises. They are justification for violence, both there and here. Sometimes we have to tell our allies they have gone too far, no matter which side of this Jewish divide we are on. What we do not need is the Jewish establishment telling those challenging Zionism, you're doing Judaism wrong and thus you are beyond the pale. We also do not need anti-Zionists telling the rest of the Jewish world they're doing Judaism and humanitarianism wrong and must be excluded and banned and boycotted. With no Messiah, there is no one capital T truth. We do our best to find our truth and to learn from others. The prophet Micah wrote, Ki mitzion tetzei Torah, the Torah comes forth from Zion. Is that a Torah of strict laws and commandments and a promised land? Or is it a Torah of compassion and kindness and justice? One Mount Zion, many truths, many Torahs. The Jews have never had an infallible pope. The Jerusalem rabbinic court is long gone. And were a Davidic Messiah to arrive tomorrow, how many Jews would actually respond, Na'aseh v'nishma, we'll do whatever you tell us? If we heard a Messiah was arriving, we might ask, what is his platform and who is his running mate? We might also follow a different piece of Jewish wisdom. If you hear the Messiah has come while you are planting a tree, finish planting the tree first and then examine the Messiah. Live life. No one votes for a Messiah or for a God, and we who value democracy and freedom, we like it that way. In our days, we celebrate what the book of Judges lamented. There is no king in Israel, and everyone does what is right in their own eyes. Sounds good. There is no king in Israel, and everyone does what is right in their own eyes. No king, no Messiah, no consensus, more freedom. Two Jews, many Judaisms, more wrestling, some teku, hallelujah, so to speak. I'd like to wish you good wishes for the new year. It feels hard to wish us a Shana Tova, a good year, not knowing what the new year will be. Some have begun to shift that blessing and that hope for the future a little bit to wish each other a Shana Yoter Tova, to wish each other a better year in the year that begins. And so I wish you Shana Yoter Tova, a better year for this year.
Thank you for listening to the Kol Hadash podcast. To learn more, support, and membership to Kol Hadash, visit kolhadash.com. To learn more about secular humanistic Judaism, visit shj.org.